I have today with us Jashpreet Singh, founder and CEO of Dhruva, as part of the celebration. And Dhruva is a remarkable company and a very important company. So some of you may have read my earlier coverage of Dhruva as India's flagship global technology product company. And that statement that I just made is loaded with significance. India has been primarily a services industry when it comes to technology and information technology. So the fact that India is now in the process of making a transition to building a product industry, a technology product industry, is a very big step. And Jashpreet has led Dhruva in creating one of the first success stories in that model. Jashpreet, welcome. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Good morning. Good morning, Smita. Thanks very much.
So Jashpreet will not be on video, but he's going to be on audio, and we'll spend the next half hour with him, and then we will get to the regular mentoring session, folks. So Jashpreet, let's start with some, you know, context for our entrepreneurs. You have built one of the first global technology product companies out of India. Tell us what you do and why it is so special and why you're growing fast in the global market.
Got it. Good questions. You know, we call ourselves Converged Data Protection for the mobile enterprise. Typically, enterprise used to lock down data in a data center. With the last 6-7 years, data is getting to mobile, laptops, and now to cloud. There's no easy way to protect it, manage it, build compliance, governance around it. So we converge the paradigms of availability, making your data always available for your business, and your governance, which is your compliance, e-discovery logic, across your mobile workforce from a single pane of glass. So Dhruva brings the same data center class availability and governance, which we're very used to in a traditional application, to this new mobile and cloud world.
Okay, and how does Dhruva fit into this extremely crowded cloud infrastructure, mobile infrastructure, mobile cloud infrastructure services, and how do you differentiate it? You know, we've had actually several companies that are, you know, in adjacent spaces to you, and of course there are subtleties, and of course there are differentiators, and that's kind of, you know, as part of, we emphasize hugely on positioning. So what I'd like you to do is to kind of walk us through how you position Dhruva in that crowded market. What competitors do you see most often in deals, and how do you win against them?
Got it. So cloud is one of our biggest disruptors of our time. Every single thing which you're used to in a traditional buying cycle in enterprise, in your data center, you're going to see disrupted in the cloud. So cloud is likely to be a $50 billion spend in the next few years, and next couple of years. So it's bound to have a bunch of noise around it. So traditionally, what we have seen in the industry so far is the players who have managed the mobility management part of it, the MDM providers who have built a device management layer. And now is a time for a player like Dhruva to come in to manage the data fabric of it. So if you are an organization which is very distributed and very mobile, you are bound to have a big chunk of your data, close to 30% of your data, purely exclusively on endpoint devices and also now getting to cloud application. There's a data fabric which binds it together. There's a single, you know, glass CIO can see, okay, what did the Jashpreet really store on iPhone before the breach really happened? Or if I'm part of a subpoena, part of a litigation, how do I gather information around this particular investigation when all this data is all out on all these devices and these applications? So our buyers are typically very security conscious, very governed organizations, typically large enterprises, and we act as a data fabric. And cloud definitely has a spectrum of all the solutions, right from people who provide the infrastructure to build apps, people who manage the application, and then it's players like us who build a data fabric across these mobile use cases. We compete with a lot of incumbents. Our core competition is against the big guys like EMC, IBM, Symantec, who've traditionally existed and done very well in the data center. And now they're trying to bring their legacy application to this mobile and cloud world, not understanding either of them. So we traditionally replace one of those workloads. A single solution of ours can replace a backup solution, an archival solution, an e-discovery solution deployed by a big incumbent in a very siloed manner. So we break these silos and give a single clean of glass, which is very, very efficient for an organization and leaves little room for error in these situations.
So that's on the incumbent side, but there are a bunch of startups who are doing this kind of workloads as well. And some of these startups have matured into significant size. They're very late stage startups. They're not like early stage startups anymore. Which of those do you see in your competitive landscape?
The slice which we have cut for ourselves is actually the exact use case we solve. Actually, not really crowded with a bunch of startups. There are a few of us. It's us. It's, you know, one of our core competition comes from an Excel startup called Code42, which only does the backup piece, not the archival logic, governance logic. But the space is pretty, any storage and security space today is heavy with the incumbents, especially the domain React, and I'm not sure which ones are you referring to. We don't actually, our competition comes from customer apathy to incumbents, not necessarily a lot of startups.
Okay, so I'll just kind of, for our audience who are following this series, I'll just summarize a few conversations to go and check out, and as we are going through this conversation with you, it would be interesting to contrast and compare the positionings of each of your offerings. So one conversation that you could look back at is Ignite, and that's a cloud data management, cloud storage, cloud data management, backup kind of offering, and they very successfully compete against Box and Dropbox, those guys in the enterprise space with a full workflow. Then we have a company called Veeam, which was on the series recently. That's the way they have positioned themselves and really built a very large company, $300 million revenue run rate company, is in the virtualization backup space. So, and you are talking more about the mobile data as your core, mobile enterprise, mobile data as your core positioning point, and then the full workflow of archival and governance and e-discovery and all of that being part of that offering, not just backup. Did I summarize that well, Jasprit?
Yeah, so they are primary workloads or secondary workloads. Primary workloads are workloads where you run an application like a sync and share application, a collaboration application. The secondary workloads which take care of the data once it's in production for compliance logic, governance logic, security logic, it acts on the data you've already created. So we are a secondary tier solution, a secondary logic for backup and archival. So Ignite, Box, Peer, they are complement to our solution. They take care of one single workload around sync and share collaboration very well. Yes, sync and share collaboration for lesser concerned organization could or may act like a backup, but it's not truly your plan B, your compliance strategy. On the other hand, you rightly pointed out, so backup archival compliance is probably a $30 billion company, and they are tons of players. They are players who existed, who managed really well from IBM Tivoli to NetApp to Symantec, to all those players. I'm sorry, not NetApp, but Dead Backup and Symantec and others. Look at the data center very well. And data center was applications like virtualization, Oracle DB, and those. And they did a whole job of backup. The way backup was built, and I think should not be built again, is it was supposed to be graveyard for your data. You put data once in, and you're done with it. You don't do anything meaningful with it. So we brought the logic of backup to mobile and cloud. Mobile was synonymous with cloud, but did not stop there. We wanted to make this data meaningful for an organization. And mobile was a very, very security conscious, compliance conscious world. So we took your data, your backup data, and started to build e-discovery governance compliance logic, which we now call converged data protection. So typically a buyer who's an end user computing buyer would want to buy a mobile solution, a mobile first solution. So he would look at players like Symantec, IBM, Code42, us, EMC. EMC has two or three acquisitions. And eventually if it's only backup, he may not do bad choosing any one of us. We are the best by Gartner, but he may not go wrong by choosing a number two as well. But our whole value prop comes into picture that backup, as we know it, should be dead. And the way you leverage information from it would define the series of next players. So there are things to do with
the data that has been backed up as opposed to just storing it away and forget about it. That's the differentiator that you're pointing out.
Yep.
Okay, so now I'm going to follow up that question with something that, you know, goes back a ways to your beginning. When you started Dhruva, how much of this positioning was clear in your mind? What was the thinking at the very beginning of your journey? What was the hypothesis you started with, and how did you validate it?
It's a great question. I think any startup journey from Dhruva to Amazon is all about pivots in your positioning, your messaging, and everything. When we started off, building a data collection strategy, a backup strategy itself was a tough gamut for a mobile world. People had no idea in this new device called laptop and tablet and everything else. How would they build a data protection strategy? So we solved that first. But I think any successful startup knows that no great idea comes to only one single individual. So we had a surge of 7 to 8 startups which started on the same idea, built for the enterprise, doing the same thing, and of course we had to beat them in innovation and go to market. And I think 2 or 3 of us remained, and a couple of us got acquired. In the last 2 years, we quickly realized that, hey, mobile is a much, much more security conscious world compared to your data center. And there are all these siloed workloads which you could immediately absorb. And the good part of what we have felt, what we have built, day one, we had a vision that your backup shouldn't be built as your graveyard. We are file system guys from Veritas. We build large scale, reusable, very live assets of organizations called clustering file systems. And we build our core like that. So our architecture came to our help, and we could evolve. Pivot probably is not a right word, but we evolved our product very well. Our messaging evolution, our GTM evolution, also took some time. We also understood that it's not only important to pivot the technology, but also pivot the buyer and how you are perceived with the buyer. So we evolved in the last 18 months as doing more with the data, and hence the converged data protection message, which now resonates with the buyers a lot more. And we are able to crack a lot of large enterprise. Our large enterprise sales in the last 18 months have grown 6x from Pfizer, NASA, PwC, Deloitte, KPMG, and Booz Allen. So a lot of security conscious players.
Now this is a journey that you have done over about 6 years now, Jaspreet. When did you start?
Started 2008, like fall.
7 years.
It's been almost 6.5 years, going to be 7 years by this fall, late summer this fall. Yes.
And you have, in that time, you have moved from your headquarters from Pune to San Francisco. And you made a conscious decision to be based here in the Bay Area. Talk to us about that decision. There are a lot of people trying to figure that decision out right now. I just published a piece, a blog post on this topic yesterday, giving more guidelines on what is happening here and what are the constraints and what are the requirements and so forth. So talk to us about that decision of yours. Why did you move? What has been your experience? What has been the pros and cons of that decision?
So the first 2 years of Dhruva was only like soul searching. We were trying to understand what does a product startup look like. Almost mm-hmm. the entire early team comes from a product company, but had no idea how to build a product ground up. So if you felt the pain the first 2 years and you were not even funded to not be in an ecosystem which builds products, we managed to build something, managed to get customers. So when Sequoia funded in 2010 summer when they funded, they floated an idea, and at that time it was not a norm. They floated an idea that, hey, we've seen and built many startups before, just not this part of the world before. Do you want to consider a move to Silicon Valley and start building your the core exec team and from scratch there and start establishing a go-to-market from there? That market understands India has a great talent for engineers. The gap between tech and product was sort of missing at least back then, and also the GTM talent. How do you position something, pitch something, sell something? So I tried to relocate between 2010 and 2011 and made that transition. It was an important one for Dhruva. We understood the ecosystem here. We moved for only one reason: talent pool. Talent pool which knows how to build product, how to sell product, market products, and it was a great move for us. We were able to hire a very seasoned team, able to also pitch the product. We were ranked number one by Gartner almost immediately, but it was also not an easy one. Valley in the Valley, there are 1/3 startups in the storage system space is now built in built by founders of Indian origin. But the transition to come in and settle down in a new area, build your expertise, and also survive with your sales and marketing. You can't lose that traction in your GTM while you're making the transition was a tricky one. And then the communication gap between two very distinct offices, which are sometimes, people just say no startup survived that big divide of day and night. But those are some of the tough challenges we have to solve along the way. But now we are set up for success. We have two core teams which both communicate very well and execute very, very well.
And so by the time you came to San Francisco, you were 2 years into the company, and you had a validated business, you had customers, you had some revenue, and you had funding. So you didn't come here to raise funding. You didn't come here with, just a concept and not very much. You came here with some traction behind your company.
We had some funding. We had 30-odd customers. Sequoia was on our back to really help us. They put dedicated people to ramp our team. They put some people to. So there was some backing for us to succeed. Wouldn't have been able to make the transition without all the help we got.
Now talk about the funding strategy. So how did you get the seed funding? What did you have to show at the time? What about Series A, Series B? What's been the funding trajectory of the company?
I believe the most important thing in a funding strategy is that the strategy entrepreneurs know very well is to work hard and build a product and build traction. Money is commodity, will come your way. Building a better business plan does not help. Spending the same amount of time in building a business does help. So we always have the philosophy.
As you know, Jaspreet, we espouse, we've talked about this earlier, is that, investors, including seed investors, do not fund concepts, they fund businesses. So you have to be somewhat, into your business, showing product, customer, product market fit before you can even get seed funding these days. That's just the reality of the market.
Yeah, especially if you're a first-time founder. For a second-time founder, you can pull all the hat.
Yeah, absolutely.
First-time founder, you're absolutely right.
Absolutely, yeah, right. So in your case, and it was much earlier in the game, 2008 in India, in Pune, how did you get the seed funding?
So seed funding, we solved some couple of core challenges. I think things have changed in the last 6 years as well. Now with all the Amazon and Azure and stuff, building something, the bricks of the foundation are easier to establish. Back then, also we had to build something. We had a lot of firsts. We were showing people that we are building the first generation of data protection strategy for a mobile workforce. We're building it dedicated for the cloud. Cloud-based architectures were rare. So we solved these two tough challenges. We also had some good customer traction. But I think the seed funding we got was more on a team basis. They seen that these people are building something and have a courage to build something and think differently. So we got actually a couple of good, really good traction in the angel community, seeing us build something. And they were not wrong. Immediately after getting funded, or probably around the same time, we started getting customer traction. Customers were knocking on our doors, trying to find what we've built and started to buy over internet. We did not understand at that point in time what's our primary market, what's our primary message, but we've shown mm-hmm. enough traction that yes. I mean, in an investor's mind, there are three checklists, right? A market risk, a team risk, and an execution risk, right? So tech risk and execution risk. So we had solved the first risk of tech. Market market was sort of visible. Execution was not even known for first-time founders. So we kicked the first risk and got the funding. Series A was different. 2008, 2009, nothing was getting funded. So we just kept our head down and just focused on the customers. And we came to a profitability model of getting customers at a very small scale. We only had like 10, 11 people, close to about 20, 25 customers. But Sequoia saw that we could sell something from part of the world, not known to build a company, and then immediately move forward.
Mm-hmm. And how much did you raise from Sequoia in your Series A?
Series A, we raised about $3 million. It was a small round. It was only a stepping stone for us to prove ourselves what we're doing. Series A is typically for establishing your product foundation solid. And then I think immediately after 9 to 10 months after we did a Series B, and that was about, Series A was $5 million. I'm sorry. Series B was close to about $12 million.
And between Series A and B, you had made the move to San Francisco.
Right.
Okay. And is that all, or is there more, you've raised more money?
Of course, we've raised Series C. Thereafter, close to about $25 million. We did a small Series D, sort of second Series C, immediately a Series D of $20 million. So net raised about $68 million so far.
What is the current revenue level? How are you tracking? There's a lot of talks these days about $1 billion unicorn. How is your valuation tracking against that, benchmark? And how do you interpret the process and the current obsession over unicorns?
We're not there yet. There's a lot of good buzz and hype about unicorns, and rightfully so. Their companies are building great products and growing in valuation. We're not quite there yet, maybe a year and a half away from there. Still executing very well. We're close to about 3,000 customers. Around 12 to 1300 enterprise mid-market solid customers, then a bunch of SMEs which form the bottom of solid pyramid. So still growing. SaaS companies, the software service companies, have a lot of way to hit profitability. It's very easy to sell a hardware or a perpetual software license because you're realizing the money and revenue all up front. The SaaS companies, the metrics only evolve 3 to 4 years of solid selling. And that's why you see Box and Salesforce.com not profitable because profits and cash don't follow each other very well in those companies. So profitability is further out. We're still growing strong, growing more than 100% year on year, growing solid.
So my take is what should we say about your current revenue level? Is it like a $10 million ARR, $50 million ARR? What are you willing to say? Just give a range. You don't have to specify numbers, but give a range of how far you are.
Somewhere between there. Much more than 10, less than 50, but somewhere between there.
Okay, so just, you know, for the audience to kind of benchmark these numbers, if you look at a company that's doing about $20 million ARR, a SaaS company doing $20 million ARR, current valuation levels are, you know, a reasonable valuation even, you know, in modestly bloated markets would be a $200 million valuation. Right now the market is very bloated. So you could even get a $400 million valuation on a $20 million ARR SaaS company. So I'm just giving you these benchmarks so that you can, you know, extrapolate from that. In my mind, a real billion-dollar unicorn valuation, a reasonable billion-dollar unicorn valuation that will sustain in the public market or can generate an exit at that valuation, not just some, you know, artificial valuation that is propped up by liquidation preferences and you know, stupid VC financial engineering. A real billion-dollar unicorn valuation can be achieved with about a, you know, $80 to $100 million ARR revenue, you know, level. So our focus here is on discipline and making sure that you are following paths and goals that are reasonable and not some, you know, artificially propped up valuation. So just with my last question to you actually on this is going to be, there is a lot of funny money business going on in the market with people doing stupid financial engineering and bloating up valuations. We really hope that you will be one of the first global tech unicorns from India with a legitimate billion-dollar valuation. And we also hope that you won't get caught up in this frenzy of artificially inflated valuation and then implode in the public market. Please reassure us.
So sounds good. Course, as an entrepreneur, I'm putting my heart and soul in this business and growing as fast as possible. You raised some right questions and right points about all the valuations, all the money. The valuations are high, but I'm not, and there's a lot of funny math behind the numbers, and all the numbers it threw are pretty much ballpark right. But I think the valuations are probably here to stay, mostly because the overall world GDP and the buying for services, it has increased over the last 5-6 years, and a big part of that increase is focused on tech. And what we see close to us is the tech powering that change. Companies are disrupting transportation. They're disrupting something very, very big, mega trends. So I think valuations, in my mind, there's definitely some crazy numbers out there. But for a good chunk, may actually stay longer than we think because the fundamentals are pretty good. There are also other parts of running the right business, and you raise some very strong points. I appreciate you for that. So they are easy ways of building business always, and then they are right ways to build business. The easy way for us would have been to get tons and tons of more SMB. The right way was to focus on cloud and scaling cloud for a very enterprise-like use case, which has very sticky business. If a business is sticky, you can always pile on top as a SaaS company, and you grow in a very predictable manner. And predictability is what public companies like. So with that in mind, yes, we are trying to follow the good business practice of having a very sticky business, following a customer. It's a very, a very enterprise business. We build a DNA to serve the customers, build not a hardware revenue, which you can realize very quickly, but build a SaaS revenue, which grows over a period of time. And also, it's important to make a judgment that uh, bet- between money and a right advisor or investor, which ones to choose, and we've chosen the right board always, because you can definitely get a higher valuation. But what we've seen with Box, what we've seen with Square, some of the companies who are struggling in the public markets, is the same fact that, you could raise a crazy valuation and a crazy marketing pitch. If you can't sustain, then you have even more trouble ahead of you than the past. So in the interest of our shareholders and employees, we're trying to go ahead with our eyes open and building a very, very healthy business.
Good. So folks, the message that I want everyone to take away, and Jaspreet has a very nice job reassuring us following the fundamentals-oriented principle, is that what you really want to go for is robust, high-quality revenue with good unit economics. You don't want to go get a bunch of customers that are going to disappear tomorrow and that have no stickiness, no sustainability attached to it. So the point of being in business is to make money. Make money for yourself, make money for make money for investors, make money for employees, make money for all your team members, all the stakeholders, and deliver value to customers. That is a fundamentally solid business. Just this funny money unicorn business is definitely not what what you should be having your eyes on. So those of you who are doing this for the first time, are very early stage entrepreneurs, please do not get carried away and distracted by all this, monkey business. So Jaspreet, I know you have to go. Thank you very much for coming and sharing your perspective on your journey, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thank you very much, Puna. Thank you very much for inviting me. Thanks a lot.
Bye. Take care.